and they made me a monster. Welcome back to 32 Fans. I'm Alex Chester. With me, as always, is Wheels Wienerker. Wheels, I'm fired up today.
Yeah, people are, they want your take on Pat Shurmur going for two down eight, which, I don't know why.
Well, I'm just fired up. I'm just angry for a lot of
reasons. Okay, why are you angry? But,
so last night, a couple of controversial things happened. First of all, you spoiled Making a Murderer in the Facebook group. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
had to delete your comment.
Sorry. Yeah, if I, I'm sorry. Like, if there's an election in a few weeks, I won't tell you who's the winner, just in case you want to like DVR
I'm watching a documentary about it.
It's a news event that I saw on my Twitter feed. The only reason I didn't watch the documentary or Google like the Wikipedia page, I knew what happened without seeking it out, just from my own Twitter. Like, you would know,
and therefore, because you already knew, you didn't want to watch the show, and so you decided.
I thought
that
everyone knew.
No,
that's why I thought it was weird. I also thought you had finished it based on like what you had said. I thought you had watched.
Yeah,
it.
I was up to episode 8. I still haven't seen the last two episodes. I'm less motivated now.
By the way,
and then another crazy
thing
happened.
I don't want to say what I had said. It is possible I'm wrong. I'm just guessing based on what I thought I saw on Twitter, which also could be old news. So it's even possible.
I'm trying really hard to avoid spoilers here. I will just say that while watching, I kept thinking, like, there's not going to be any huge breaks in the story, because if there were, I would have heard about them, was sort of my assumption coming into season two.
Which is correct.
But then throughout the first 8 episodes, they continuously showed, top stories on Access Hollywood and Dr. Phil and NBC Morning News or whatever about the story, and I hadn't seen any of those interim things, so I was like, oh, I guess I haven't been paying attention to
these
things.
Well, can I count? Because I think we did a podcast together about Making a Murderer 1, and they had like basically right afterwards announced, like, we're going to do Making a Murderer 2. So the movie, the show exists without any, guarantee of anything happening. They just said they would do it again because it was just a cash grab for a season 2. It could have been way less than this. There could have been no news, and they still would have pumped out some garbage, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot of news. The first 8 episodes are really good. Can't tell you about the final 2 episodes yet. But then the next thing that happened is in AYFFL, my longtime fantasy league that's been going around since, in its current form, since 2003, and really dates back to high school for me. We had a controversial trade last night. Two people in the league cheated.
Oh, my God.
Or violated the rules.
Oh, no.
They violated the rules. Let's not say cheat, because that implies
I've been told by people
intent.
In your league, multiple people, that there's only one person who knows the rules because they're incredibly complicated, and that's you. Multiple people
the
have
rules are
told
exactly
me
one page.
That, and there's like,
well, that's the running joke in this league is that
not
it's
the
really
running
complicated.
Joke.
But the rules page
I know like offhand 5 people who there's no way they know they like spend the time to like know all the rules of this league.
Yeah, but again, the rules in this league is actually one page long. I can send you the document. It's much shorter than like the rules
caps
in our league of
so you
leagues,
can only
for example.
Like it's the most complicated fantasy football league I know of.
Again, it is one page long. It is less complicated than legal
leagues,
is for
4.
Sure. It's the least complicated. It is the least complicated fantasy football league I'm in, actually.
All right, fine. Yeah, so what was the trade?
Well, basically what happened is, and the biggest scandal is that, so I stepped down as commissioner this year, and I became assistant commissioner. So a longtime friend of mine, who now officially is commissioner of the league, although he's a rather lazy commissioner, and he forces his assistant to the commissioner, which is me, to do a lot of the work.
Yeah, you are the Dwight Schrute. I didn't know you weren't the commissioner, but I could see you as the Dwight Schrute.
I've tried to make myself the Dwight Schrute, I've tried to step down. So basically, Thursday Night Football really ruins the ability to make trades because it locks a bunch of guys in for the week on Thursday.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so he messaged me on either Thursday night or Friday, I forget, and he said, hey, can I make a trade? He told me about a 4-player trade, but one of the players involved played Thursday night. So I said, no, you cannot make that trade, unfortunately. One of the guys played Thursday night. You have to wait and make that entire trade next week. And you and I actually had a similar scenario in League of Leagues where we were trying to pull a 3-way trade, but one of the guys in the trade was Demaryius Thomas.
Right, who had played. It messed things up.
Yeah, and so we had like a whole three-way multi-sport massive trade that the whole thing fell apart. So anyways, one of the rules in our league is you cannot have any future consideration in a trade. You cannot have any secret consideration in a trade. That means when you make a trade, the entirety of the trade must be made at the same time, and the entirety of the trade must be publicized to the entire league. Mm-hmm. You can't agree to trade other players later. You can't agree to do any favors for each other on the side.
Unwritten, but it makes sense to have it as spelled out like this on your one page.
So I'm glad you say this because to make a long story short, the same two guys ended up making a trade on Saturday night or Thursday, some point before Sunday, for just 2 players. And it was a trade that didn't make a lot of sense on its face, but whatever, they made that trade. And then yesterday afternoon, they sent through another trade of Philip Lindsay for Corey Davis, straight up. Philip Lindsay, who of course played on Thursday night, is now the sole running back in Denver because Royce Freeman's injured, for Corey Davis, who's like a garbage receiver who's worthless. So immediately it became apparent to me, well, this was the other two guys that was supposed to be in the original trade. They couldn't send it through because he had played on Thursday, so they agreed to do the trade in two parts, which is a violation of the rules. So I brought that up, and the two trade people insisted that they hadn't broken any rules. They said, yeah, you know, we had a discussion, but all along it was two completely separate trades. There was no binding that we'd both have to do both parts or anything like that.
Right, and like if Lindsay got injured, there was nothing they could have done.
Yeah, well, so then that's what he said. Oh, we didn't have to do it, you know, whatever. So they insisted it was two separate trades. And then to exculpate themselves, they decided, once we challenged them to do so, to share the conversation that they had between each other about the trade,
okay.
Right?
I like the transparency here.
And unfortunately for them, and to be fair, the person who shared the chat said, uh-oh, I think you're right. I broke the rules. And then he sent the chat. And in the chat, he says, let's trade Davis and Williams for Lindsay and Shady. And the other guy says, okay. And then the other guy says, ask Chester if it's allowed because Lindsay played it already. And then the other guy says, yes, I'll ask him. Ugh, we can't. And then the other guy says, I figured. And then he says, why don't we do one part now and one part Monday night?
Wait, so basically you said, hey, guys, did you commit the murder? And they're like, no. And then we're like, hey, can I see the documents where you're planning the murder? And they're like,
hold on, it gets better.
Wait,
it gets better. It gets better.
I found the part where exactly after we told you, you told us we couldn't murder, we planned the murder for next week. It makes no sense.
It gets any better. So then he says, okay, so we are trading Shady for Williams now and Lindsay for Davis on Tuesday.
Why would they
the
send you
says,
this?
Yeah, and then he says, okay, confirmed.
I would have Tom Brady'd my phone, deleted the whole thing.
Yeah.
Been like, sorry.
Well, so I do respect the fact that he was honest about the fact that he did cheat eventually. But so the one person was honest and shared the conversation and admitted his fault. And so the whole trade is going to be reversed. Fortunately, none of the players in the trade were started. They were all on everybody's bench all week, so it doesn't affect any scores. But the other guy who was sort of marginally involved in the chat the whole time, because he was at the Justin Timberlake concert at Madison Square Garden yesterday, he chimes in. He says, listen, guys, I'm very drunk. I'm surrounded by like tons of 14-year-old girls. I can't concentrate on this right now. But when he found out that his co-partner had shared the chat and had admitted that they had cheated and that everything was going to be reversed, he went ballistic and he said that he was quitting the league altogether.
What? But he should be only mad at his idiotic, but honest, liar of a co-owner.
No, his co-owner was honest.
Well, they cheated, intentionally cheated.
Well, so, you know, whatever. They argue that they didn't know that they're violating the rule, you know, whatever. That's not the point. The point is I was all fired up about all these things. And then Monday night, Pat Shurmur decides to go for two down 14 late in the fourth quarter, which I have to confess, a couple of weeks ago, Doug Peterson and the Eagles were down by 14 to the Vikings in the fourth quarter, and they did the exact same thing. And they converted the two, and as they were doing it, I was completely flabbergasted. This did not make any sense to me because on its face, it seems a little bit confusing. While you're going for two, you risk that you miss it, and then you're down eight, and then you're forced to go for two the second time just to get back where you would have been in the first place. So I understand, you know, I don't fault somebody for not understanding it on its face because I was in the same boat. And then at the time, people I follow on Twitter, and then there were articles about it, I quickly discovered that not only should you do this, it is obvious you should do this, and, you know, smarter football fans, stats guys, analytical guys, etc., have been writing about this for 15 years. And there's articles you can find from 2017, from 2016. This is not a new idea. It's just that it had taken a smarter coach like Doug Peterson and a more secure coach, because he just won the Super Bowl, to actually do it. And he did it 2 weeks ago. It was a huge news story at the time. Presumably every NFL team just found out about it if they didn't already. And so when Pat Shurmur was in the same scenario last night, he decided to make the exact same decision. And again, it is the obviously correct decision. Now, the announcers on Monday Night Football, Joe Tessitore, Jason Witten, and Booger McFarlane, and we've discussed them a little bit on this podcast,
just,
right?
You know, literally the A-team. Can't get better. ESPN has found their trio of the future.
Yeah. So I am not a fan of Witten, I've said. Tessitore is whatever, blah. I was a big Booger McFarlane defender until last night.
Well, he did brag about peeing himself last night. He said he would.
Yes, that was great.
He's also blocking.
He added entertainment.
He's like blocking the field for half the... His like giant mechanism that people don't know what we're talking about.
He cannot walk. Well, maybe that's why he's peeing himself, because he literally can't walk.
He's on like a crate, and then he sits there, and then his TV is so big, the TV blocks like the view for like entire half the field, basically.
Yes, it's hilarious. So So anyway, so the three of them went nuts on this decision, and they say there must be something. The kicker must be injured. There's no other reason this could possibly happen. And then for the next 2 minutes, they proceed to repeatedly blame Pat Shurmur for this decision as costing his team the game. Again, this is not a new story to anybody who follows the NFL. It happened literally 2 weeks ago, and there was significant discussion at the time about how it's the right thing to do. If one or even two or even all three of the announcers want to say, I don't care about statistics, I don't care about evidence, want to be quote-unquote old-school guys, that's fine. What's not fine is for the broadcast to not even acknowledge the alternative side, acknowledge the reality, and then try and explain it away. They didn't even do that. Finally, 20 minutes later, they did. Finally, by the time we got to SportsCenter, and I watched SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt just to see, and they discussed it, and they point out how it's obviously the correct decision. Booger McFarland came on and said, oh, I understand the analytics, but I don't really care about it, like, which is just an idiotic thing to say. But I realize there are people who don't understand it, so I want to walk through very basically why it's the right decision. So can we do that, Keith?
Yeah, well, I haven't really studied the numbers, so why don't you walk through the decision here.
Okay. So let's walk through it right now. So first of all, you're down two touchdowns late in the fourth quarter. So the assumption is that you are going to score two touchdowns and the other team's not going to score any points, right?
Well, if you're giving up more points, it's
irrelevant. If anything else happens, the game's over. Yeah. If they score another touchdown, if you don't score two touchdowns, so it's over. So the options are that you kick an extra point both times and you go to overtime, or you go for two. So those are the options. So let's start with the option of kicking the extra point. Now, extra points in the last 4 years, since we expanded out to the 33-yard extra point, converted 94% of the time. So you have a 94% chance of hitting the first extra point, a 94% chance of hitting the second extra point. That's a combined chance of 88%. So if you go for one both times, you have an 88% chance of converting it. And if you do that, now you're going to overtime. If the game goes to overtime, the Giants, because they're 1-5, they need a win. So a tie cannot help them. So there's about an 8% chance of a tie. So you take that away. And then if there's not a tie in the remaining 92%, of that, a team historically, and I looked all the way back to the NFL, all the way back as far as a Pro Football Reference has information, a team that's between a 6 and 7 point underdog, when a game goes to overtime, wins 41% of the time. So if you take the 41%, the 92%, the 94%, the 94%, the total chance that the Giants have of winning the football game if they kick an extra point both times is 33%. But forget about all that. I'm going to make the numbers super simple, and I'm going to give a million benefits of the doubt in favor of kicking one.
Okay.
So for argument's sake, even though this is not the case, for argument's sake, let's pretend that you have a 50-50 chance of winning the game if you go for one. In other words, you have a 94% chance of successfully getting a one-point conversion. Even the best kicker in the world, Justin Tucker, who's never missed in his career, he obviously missed one the day before, costing his team the game. And you have a 48% chance of converting a two-point conversion. But to make the numbers easy, 94 and 48 are confusing numbers. Let's just make it 50 and 100, all right? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you the extra point automatically, and I'm going to give you a 50-50 shot at the two-point conversion.
Yeah.
Good? Okay, we're doing that. Also further, even though, as I said, there's a chance of a tie, and even though, as I said, the Giants do not have a 50% chance of winning as they go to overtime because they're still the underdog, let's forget about all that. Let's assume, for argument's sake, the Giants have a 50-50 shot of winning the game if it goes to overtime, there's no chance of a tie, and they have a 100% chance of kicking the extra points. So let's assume, for argument's sake, that their actual chance of winning the game if they kick it one point or both times 50%, is 50%, okay. Because they're guaranteed to get hit both, and they have a 50% chance in overtime, right? So it's actually 33%. But we're going to make it easy. Let's assume it's 50. Fine. So you have a 50% chance of winning the game if you kick an extra point. So what is your percent chance of winning the game if you go for two? So you go for two, and what happens? You either make it or you miss it. And we said it's 50-50, right? So if you make it, 50% of the time you make it, now you're down by 6 points. On your second touchdown, of course, you're going to go for one, right? Because you don't need to go for two at that point. So you go for one the second time. You make the one because we said we're hypothetically saying it's a 100% chance to make one to make the numbers easy. So that means that if you go for two, 50% of the time you win the game.
Right.
Right? So if you go for two and make it, you win the game. That's 50% of the time. As we said, if you go for one, you have 50% of the chance of winning. But what happens to 50% of the chance where you miss? Well, now on your second touchdown, what do? Now you have to go for two because you're down 20-12. And again, there's a 50-50 chance. So 50% of the chance you make it, which means now you're tied at 20-20.
Well, really, like a 45%.
And 50% of the chance you miss.
But yeah.
Yeah, but we're just doing 1,500 just to make the numbers easier. And then, so you have a 50% chance of making it, which means now it's tied 20-20, just as it was if you kicked the 1 point both times. You have the 50% chance of missing, which means you lose 20-18. So once again, if you go for two, the first time, in total, you have a 50% chance of winning the game, a 25% chance of losing the game, and a 25% chance of the game going to overtime. Versus the other way, you have a 100% chance of the game going to overtime. So removing the overtime, removing the 50-50, by going for two, you have a 2-in-3 chance of winning the game. In total, if we divide the 50% overtime and, you know, half of those are wins, half of those are losses, again, ignoring a tie, that means that the total chance you have of winning the game by going for two is 62.5.
Okay.
Versus by going for one, it's 50. So you increase your chance by 12.5% overall.
All right. Breaking news, Eli Apple traded.
Have I explained that? Have I explained that?
Yeah,
that makes sense.
It makes sense. It's a little dry. I think we got to get into what we're doing this week.
It's a little dry, but it's not because you have all these idiots. And then, I mean, I was looking on Facebook to see people's conversations, and I wasn't waiting in because it's not worth dealing with idiots.
It's a mistake. You made a mistake by doing that.
But I was just reading it with Schadenfreude.
Like,
I mean, like,
you know, Facebook search, like QAnon or something before that.
I saw one person, and these are all friends of mine. These are people I know. Like, these are people who, like, drive cars and have children
so not
and,
me.
Like, vote
okay,
in elections.
But yeah.
Yeah. This one guy says, he's, one guy explains it, and he's like, it's simple math. And the other guy says, it's not math, it's statistics. Statistics and math are two different subjects.
Deep.
So these are the morons we're dealing with. And again, you're not a moron to think on its face that it's a wrong decision or a confusing decision, because that's what I thought at first when the Eagles did it 2 weeks ago. But once you break down the numbers, again, 50% chance you win the game outright, and 50% chance you still have another chance, and 50% of that chance you tie and go back to square one.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just obvious. It's you know, it's you dramatic, and that Pat Shurmur did not explain the numbers exactly in his postgame press conference. What he said is we increase our chances to win the game by 50%. That's not exactly correct. He increases his chance to win the game by 12.5%.
I'm really like him more than what he meant to McAdoo at this point, just by what he did last night.
Well, but here's the thing. The play call itself on the play was probably
a bad
call.
Well, the play call all night was problematic, but the idea that he has
so
like,
he's been a very bad play caller.
It was good.
Yeah, but that's the thing. He's a very bad play caller, but at least the fact that he's thinking about, like, that he acknowledges reality. Again, it's not an opinion whether going for two is right or wrong. It is objectively the correct thing to do if your goal is to win the football
game. I think
game.
Coaches like to do stay below the radar and not do things that get noticed because...
Oh, for sure. The whole conversation was about Pat Shurmur going for two. And even though ESPN knows that it's the correct decision and acknowledged it explicitly, repeatedly on SportsCenter, all night long, that was the conversation. And when you go on ESPN.com right now, on the homepage, it's one of the top articles. And if you listen to Around the Horn or PTI or any of those stupid shows today, I'm sure that you're going to have like Bill Plaschke and these morons talking about it also.
And if you get it right, and then you go 5-11 anyway, the story isn't, well, he's a gambler. You know, the story is that you went 5-11. But if you get it wrong, it's like he went 5-11 and he's dumb.
The Eagles literally did it and made it 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't talked about at all on Monday Night Football by people who you would think would be familiar with what happened 2 weeks before in the sport, which they're announcing.
Uh-huh.
And this is a frustration in general. I mean, you've been watching the baseball playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Who hates baseball more than John Smoltz? Is there anybody who hates baseball the way it's played in 2018 more than John Smoltz?
They're cranky. Joe Buck doesn't like baseball. He likes being an announcer, but he doesn't like baseball. Ron Darling loves baseball, at least.
Well, why are these guys announcing the most important games?
I mean, who is the good, who do you want announcing the games? It's just, you know what it should be? The best team gets to announce the games. Like, the best, announcing team, as voted by the fans, they get to, that's not in the World Series, so there's no bias issue. Or you could do what ESPN's been doing, and just have, because there's no home TV announcers for the playoffs. So you should have two telecasts, like Fox and Fox Sports 1. One of them should be like the Red Sox announcers. One of them would be the Dodgers announcers. Man, Vin Scully retired at the wrong time also. Dodgers keep making the World Series. He's not in the picture.
Yeah. I mean, I think that rule number one has to be you have to care about the sport. You have to love the sport and enjoy the sport.
I mean, Buck openly doesn't care about the sport. I mean, same thing with Nance. Nance only cares about golf. He doesn't care about... He pretends to care. He's better than Buck, but he doesn't really care about the NFL or college basketball. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we're doing coachy rankings this week. Oh, Merrill Hodge. You know Merrill Hodge. He wrote a book. Do you want to hear the title of the book, Chester? It's called Brainwashed, The Bad Science Behind CTE and the Plot to Destroy Football. This is not a novel. This is a real nonfiction book. It'll be in the Library of Congress. Contributions by Dr. Peter Cummings, MD. That's great.
Can I ask a question? Does this book brag on its cover about how many pages it is?
No, not on the cover I see. He's a board-certified neuropathologist. I think that's like a fake doctor, neuropathologist. I'm not sure.
No, what I see here is dust jacket. It says brainwashed, 6x9 hard case with dust jacket, 336 pages.
I have invited Merrill Hodge onto 32 Fancy. He's not your response. I just invited him to come on the podcast and discuss how CT is fake. I want to hear all about it. We could talk football. He knows the stuff. He used to be on Edge NFL Matchup, like the only real show on ESPN that like talks football. So
I remember him on the Steelers before Jerome Bettis.
Nah, you don't remember that. It was like before you were alive.
Yeah, dude. I had his card in like 91, 92.
Let's see. Merrill Hodge retired in 94. So you don't remember him playing, but I guess you had his card.
Yeah. Well, 92 was the first season I remember well. I remember Bill Cowher's rookie season well because the two rookie coaches that year were Danny Green and Bill Cowher. They both went 11-5.
You're saying you were a nerd. Okay.
The 92 season was
all right.
My
so
first
speaking of Danny Green and who I believe is no longer with us, right? And Bill Cowher, who is?
Yeah. Breaking news. Spoiler alert.
Let's do coach rankings. Who's 32nd? Who's the worst coach in the NFL according to me and you?
Okay. Well, first of all, is that how we're doing it? We're starting from 32 to 1?
I don't think anybody will care who's 32 if we start at 1.
I'm just trying to buy time because I don't have my chart up right now.
All right, let me tell you one more thing. Are you excited for coming up very soon, the biggest sporting event of the week is beginning?
Yeah, what's that?
It's the World Wrestling Championships, 97 kilogram division. Kyle Snyder, defending gold champion, against the Bear, Abdul Saev for Russia. It's U.S. versus Russia. It's the Cold War on the mat. It's a big deal.
Why are you bringing this up?
You said you were stalling for time, and it's the biggest sporting event of the day.
Oh, okay, fine. All right, well, I have it open. The worst coach in the league, I had him at 29, but you have him last, is Hugh Jackson.
I had him at 29.
You have him
dead
last.
There's no one whose basement is lower or whose ceiling is lower, so he's the worst coach. It's crazy because I went to the coaching list on Wikipedia, and I sorted by wins. And he's literally behind guys who started a few weeks ago, and he's been the coach since 2016.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's doing better in ties and overtime games. He's very good at games.
I mean, they have a really good team. Like, he's actually wildly underperforming this year. He's about to get fired. This is his worst coaching job. Because the first 2 years, he had nobody. Now, like, everyone's underperforming on the whole team. Baker has regressed, basically, in a few games. Like, I'm not nervous about him long term. I think he's going to be really good. But he's not doing anything. They're getting nothing out of Landry. They had to trade Hyde to convince him to play Chubb, who had a 3-carry, 100-yard, 2-touchdown game and didn't earn him any more carries the next week.
Yeah. Yeah, the next
week. He's a disaster. He blames everybody but himself in the losses. He's going to struggle to get an offensive coordinator job after this. That's how you know you have a bad coach. If their tenure is so disastrous that they cannot even get a coordinator gig. Sometimes these guys...
Well, look at Mike Tice for the Vikings. After he was fired, he never became more than an offensive
coach. Well, Mike Tice is different because he was essentially a rah-rah coach who was mostly an offensive line coach. Like, he'll always be able to work.
Yeah, they hired him. They actually hired him to save money because what happened is he came in as an interim coach at the end of the season before the lockout. And it being unclear if there was going to be a season, their ownership didn't want to go pay a coach who might not even be coaching $2 million a year when Tice was making far and away the least of any coach in the NFL, so little that he actually had to sell his Super Bowl tickets to make some money. And so they really only just kept
him. Yeah, but Tice is a bad example. He was the OC 1 year of his entire career. So he was an offensive line coach who ended up getting a...
But Hugh Jackson was supposed to be a good OC.
Yeah, but I just think he's like maybe he could get a Big 12 job or like an American Conference OC job after this. But I just think there's no way any NFL team is giving him an offensive coordinator gig again.
Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at our list. None of my bottom three are in the bottom three. The bottom three are your exact order. So somehow.
You know why Mike Tice retired from coaching after the end of last season? Because players don't want to be coached. What a like a football guy move also.
Oh, yeah. All right, number 31 on your list and on our cumulative list is Steve Wilks. You know, a first-year coach.
Who's in danger of
this
getting fired.
A bit harsh on him.
Like, he's a first-year coach who's in grave danger of not lasting until his second year.
His team is very bad. His best player has demanded that he be traded.
And you know, they're getting nothing out of David Johnson. It's possible he's an amazing coach, but based on the information we have, and it's silly to rank all these rookie coaches, who I assume are basically all coming up except...
Well, other than the rookie coaches, and this is how bad, I don't know if it's that coaches are so bad right now or it's so hard to be a coach, but other than the rookies, everybody on my list between 17 and 32 I think should be fired.
Yeah, you could do better than, I also had, I don't know about fired, but there's, well, we'll get into it, but there is a replacement level. So, I don't.
Well, for each guy, why don't we say whether we think he should be fired or not? So, Hugh Jackson, we both agree
Steve
should be
Wilkes,
fired.
Steve Wilkes, I need to see more, but if he doesn't turn it around, I don't think
I would not fire
second
Steve
year.
Wilkes.
I do not think he'll get a second year.
To get fired after 1 year is very unusual.
Happens. So Wilkes may have been overpromoted. Here is his. He was a college secondary coach who gets hired by the Bears to be the secondary coach. He does 3 years with the Bears, 3 years with the Chargers, 4 years with the Panthers. So again, 2014, still secondary coach, gets promoted to assistant head coach for 2 years. He has 1 year coordinator experience in Carolina and somehow gets the job, even though Carolina didn't have a great year last year. So he's wildly overpromoted. Now, Doug Peterson, some people said, was overpromoted, but or Mike Lombardi said it. But like that's you don't normally get a coaching job with 1 year of coordinator experience. Now, we just said Mike Tice, but Mike Tice was different in that, you know, he was sort of a very good offensive line coach who, you know, needed a coordinator with him also. And also wasn't a good head coach. So maybe it proves, you know, it proves that it was a bad hire. Who's number 30?
Yeah. All right, number 30 on your list, also on our cumulative, Vance Joseph. You just saw in person the Jets blow out Denver.
And also so Vance Joseph, you know, I've always hated him because I've mentioned this story in the podcast before, but he's the worst player in Jets history. It doesn't seem like the players respect him.
He just won his last game by 35 points.
Yeah, who did he beat? A guy who might not make it to his bye week.
Yeah, I think the bigger problem with Denver really lies with the front office or with John Elway, because this is a team that has not had a quarterback since Peyton Manning fell apart. They spent $20 million on Case Keenum, a career backup, a career third string. I mean, Case Keenum was the Vikings' third string quarterback to start the season last year. He has this miraculous season, and I'm fine giving him a chance as long as you have someone else the way that, like, you know, the Broncos did, for example, with the Cardinals. But for Case Keenum to be your only option is just... that's a big mistake.
Yeah, and well, you heard what happened since we started this podcast also. That Chad Kelly, the backup who a lot of people think it was about to start, just got arrested.
Yeah, got arrested.
Kelly is you know, was about to start, I think, probably in a week or two if Keenum kept struggling. Now, you know, he might not stay in the league. Well. Now, Vance Joseph, as he gets hired last year, he gets hit by a couple sexual assault allegations. I think there was two separate ones. Really, they were like a little bit too, you know, they probably would have had to just pay him, so they didn't fire him. But he never should have gotten the job, and people really immediately forgot about it, but he should not have been hired. And you want to hear something amazing? A longtime defensive backs coach for the Niners, Texans, and Bengals. He does a decade. The Dolphins hired him as a D coordinator in 2016. I don't remember the Dolphins defense in 2016 lighting the world on fire, but maybe it did. And then... he gets hired as head coach. So, again, one-year coordinator, and he's not – I mean, he hasn't been around that long. He's 46 now. He got hired. He was 44. Maybe we're sensing a trend where these guys should have way more than one-year coordinating experience, especially the way it works in Major League Baseball sometimes is you can work your way up. You're like a double-A manager and a triple-A manager, and you're literally working your way through the minors, unless you're like Paul Molitor and you're – really famous or your Hall of Famer. Although Paul Molitor was the hitting coach at some point, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes you can get a gig, especially these catchers sometimes get a gig without any managerial experience, even being a bench coach. But now we've talked about three guys already who...
Yeah, but baseball's very different.
Yeah, but the point is football doesn't have... Like, in theory, the best way to practice being a head coach would be to go to, like, Appalachian State and be the head coach for a few years. Right? That's better experience than being like a position coach and then getting a couple years of coordinating experience, having a team that gets out in the playoffs and stupidly getting a job.
Being an NFL head coach is like being president. You need to have prior experience. Yeah. But once in a while, they don't, and we see what happens.
29.
By the way, breaking news to the podcast, your New York Jets just signed Rishard Matthews.
Jets signed Matthews. He should be. I mean, the Jets were throwing to guys at that game. So many Vikings fans, by the way. You must have been in heaven.
Yeah.
So many Vikings fans.
Great.
Did your
experience.
Son enjoy it? Was it a positive experience? You didn't even bring your oldest son, right?
My oldest son. So here's the thing. I was going to go with friends in the beginning of the week. My wife put the kibosh on that because she doesn't want me to have any friends.
You mean because she's like, wait, Alex, like you're not going to like bring invisible people to a game?
No. She basically said I couldn't leave her with all three kids. I had to take a kid. and I wasn't going to, like,
I mean, the Vikings come to play the Jets once every 8 years.
Yeah, I know. I was there last time in 2010. And so so my oldest son was going to come.
Was that a night game?
The 2010, yeah. It was the Brett Favre Monday Nighter. It was delayed an hour because of a thunderstorm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I was there because I could only go when games were Monday night back then because I was working.
Oh, you were there. Oh, but we didn't know each other.
So I was there. We didn't. We knew. Well, we didn't. Yeah.
That was a miserable experience, that game. We had to stand in the concourse for an hour. The game was delayed.
Yeah, I forgot about that. The game was delayed. I had never been to a delayed game. Yeah. I've been to, you know, over 100 football games. It was the first time I'd ever been to a
delayed
game.
Well, the very first game the Jets ever played in that stadium was also delayed. It was also a night game. The same thing.
Well, was that the new stadium or was it the last year of the old stadium?
No, this is the new stadium, 2010.
Oh, so we have we're in a box that's not especially useful, but if for rain, it would be incredibly useful because you can
not
be
get
inside.
Wet. Yeah, it was a miserable experience because also then we had, like, you know, your seats were all, it was a miserable experience. Brett Favre threw the only.
By the way, football in the rain is 100 times worse than football in the snow.
Oh, yeah, infinitely.
100 times worse.
Yeah.
I went to 1997 Jets Ravens game that went deep into overtime. Jets, I believe, won 1916 on a John Hall field goal. It was freezing rain. We used to use binoculars because we sat behind the end zone, so I can't see, and my grandfather can't see, you know, past the 30-yard line the other way. So we'd use binoculars. Now I can't see, like, past, you know, yeah. Now I just watch the screen. It's a waste of time for me to go to the games.
Yeah.
So our binoculars were ruined by the second quarter. Like, they actually got destroyed. All my clothes, like, I had, like, thrown in the garbage. Like, they were, like, the wettest. The drive home was so miserable that at least they won. The drive home after a team loses when you're stuck in that Giant Stadium parking lot is atrocious.
Did you see what Jets fans did to a Vikings car at the tailgate?
Yes, I was hoping it was your car as long as you weren't in it.
Yeah, they burnt that thing to a crisp.
Yeah, that's Jets fans, honestly, Jets classy. Fans, I would expect that more in Minnesota. The Vikings have some rowdy fans in the parking lot. The Jets.
No, the Vikings don't. The Vikings don't tailgate. Their game's downtown. There's no like.
Well, the new stadium, you mean?
No, I've never been to the new stadium. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there was always crazy stories of things happening at the Metrodome.
No,
like people being like Packers fans being beat up in the parking lot.
Are you kidding? Not Minnesota.
I think when I was a kid, I remember reading about a Packers fan like being stabbed.
There is no chance. No, you're maybe a Bears game. No, that never happened.
100% in Minnesota, because I remember a Vikings fan telling me.
No one in Minnesota has ever stabbed anyone. That's a lie.
Okay, fine.
Anyway, so Vance Joseph, number 30. Number 29 is a guy we have a big disagreement about, Dirk Koetter. I have him 31. To me, Dirk Cutter's got to go. You have him all the way up to 24.
All these guys should. Anyone 24 under is. It's almost a pass on the rookie coaches. So 24, he's just ahead of all the rookies, and Hugh Jackson, maybe one other guy.
Okay.
Koetter's going to get fired.
Okay.
I will say, you know, maybe I boosted him up a spot or two because they've played much better. We thought that they might be 0-4. We thought Koetter might get fired at the bye.
Yeah.
That didn't even come close to happening. The offense is actually kind of clicking. It's not really his fault that Jameis Winston is a lunatic who makes like 10 horrendous decisions every game. Jameis Winston is the new Blake Bortles. Like, he's a good fantasy quarterback, and people probably assume, like, wow, he's having a big year. Where, you know, Mariota, who can't complete a pass, like, oh, now Winston's definitely winning that battle. No, Winston sucks.
Yeah.
He's just putting up big fantasy numbers.
And there's a chance Winston's out of football in 2 or 3 years.
I mean, I've been saying that. Like,
in hindsight, Mariota, Winston, they're both losers. You should not have taken a quarterback.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But Darnold, Mayfield, they're both Hall of Famers.
Yeah. I mean, definitely. Mariota has a playoff win under his belt. Will he get to 2 playoff wins in his career?
Ooh, that's a good one. I would say yes. I mean, it's so easy to win a playoff game in the AFC. Like, you could win another playoff game this year. What are they, 3-3, 3-4?
Well, that's
no
true.
They're in, like, a tie, essentially, for that division within a half game.
Well, just to bring up another Tennessee quarterback, okay, Vince Young was a first-round draft pick, a rookie, highly touted. His first year, he goes 8-5, makes the Pro Bowl. His next year, he goes 9-6. The next year, he was injured. The next year, he went 8-2. So, in Tennessee, as a starter... And then he went 4-4 the last season, lost the job. But he was 30-17 as a starter. He had a lot of wins there.
Yeah. He was kind of mistreated. I don't think Vince Young had a chance to fail himself out of the league.
Yeah, he makes a playoff game at the age of 24. If you would have bet at that point, will he win a playoff game in his career, you would have said, of course he will.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. It wouldn't even have been a conversation.
And then out of football at 28.
Yeah, very sad career, honestly, Vince Young. It's depressing.
So I wouldn't assume. There's a lot of guys.
I think, like, if you're going to be if you're going to end up being, like, a backup quarterback, even a good one, like, I'm sure C.J. Beathard is, like, incredibly pleasant. Like, if you want to be a backup quarterback and people keep you around, just be, like, a really good guy to have the, in the quarterback room, and they'll keep you for 10 years.
Yeah. The best example of that, of course, is clipboard Jesus Charlie Whitehurst.
Yeah, Chase Daniel. But, yeah, I think just be nice, and they'll keep you around. All right, who's the next coach? We're going slow here.
Yeah, well, hold on. I want to ask you a question here. We were just talking about, you know, how easy it is to win a playoff game. Can I give you a list of quarterbacks who never won a single playoff game in their career?
Yeah, but don't say anyone from the 70s when there was no playoffs, though.
Why were there no playoffs in the 70s?
I mean, there were less. If six teams weren't making it, it was very hard to win a playoff game.
Well, four teams were making it, but there were like 22 teams in the league, so.
Yeah. Yeah, we've discussed this on quarterback rings. Give me modern guys who haven't won a playoff game. We're not interested in guys from the 70s right now.
Okay. Well, I mean, because Sonny Jurgensen's a Hall of Famer who never even made a playoff game, which is insane.
Yeah, but we've discussed that 10 times, and nobody cares.
It's a, but can you imagine a guy today making the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, I mean, Skip Bayless would talk about how Sonny Jurgensen was, like, the least clutch guy ever. He didn't have the clutch gene. He didn't even have, like, the competent gene. He melted when it came to November, which, by the way, was when they played the championship.
So I need a guy who played after the 70s for you. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, or we could just skip it because nobody cares. But if you want to mention good quarterbacks who never won a playoff game.
Yeah, most of my guys are in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I'm not surprised because there was less playoffs. And also, like, you were playing against super teams. There was, you know, if you were against the Cowboys or the Steelers or then the Niners in the 80s, like, you were just never going to win a playoff game. You'd make the playoffs, then you'd lose 49-3.
Yeah, Steve Grogan and Bobby Hebert both never won a playoff game. Trent Green never won a playoff game.
I mean, there are franchises then, right? The Cardinals didn't win one for like 50 years. The Lions?
Yeah.
Not so crazy. All right, keep going.
All right, so
who's next? Matt Patricia?
So yeah, Matt Patricia's next on this list. You know, I'm a little bit higher on him than you. He's a rookie, like another second-year coach we already mentioned. He's been accused credibly of sexual assault, or actually worse, I think, in his case. The Lions are doing a little bit better than I thought, but the Lions, no matter who their coach is basically, they've been an 8-18 for the last like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, now Patricia's in the Patriots system, which obviously is useful. His only non-Patriots experience was as a grad assistant for Syracuse. So he doesn't have the one-year coordinator thing I was talking about. He was the coordinator for the Patriots for a very long time, for six seasons. And six seasons where they were in the Super Bowl, the AFC Championship game every single year but one, I think. Or did they make it all six of those years? People were down on the hire. They fought to keep McDaniels, didn't fight to catch him. All this has been said before. He's only 44 years old. Sometimes that's too young to be a coach. And people were ready to fire him after the Jet game. But since then, they've looked very competent. And I think they're going to, if they beat Seattle this week, they're going to, you know, they have a real chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah. So, Matt Patricia, so you might go up on him, you're saying.
Yeah, he could move up. I don't think he's incompetent. Listen, this team has a lot of talent with Kerryon Johnson, who, by the way, I was wrong about a lot of players this year, especially when I said Thielen would collapse and Diggs would be the Vikings' main guy.
Yeah.
But, like, Kerryon Johnson, I liked after that first game, and he looks now like you should have bought him cheap in fantasy like a week ago, because now he's going really, you know, for a lot of value. Yeah, the Lions are the Titans of the NFC.
Yeah, I usually call them the Ravens of the NFC, but the Ravens look a little bit better.
Oh, that's fair. They're somewhere between because they're better than the Titans, but they're not even close. I mean, the Ravens have won Super Bowls. Like, they're not even.
Well, I don't mean historically. I mean the last couple of years. Yeah. All right. Number 26, we have a tie between two old veterans who should not be doing this anymore. John Gruden, who is one of our biggest disagreements. I have him dead last. John Gruden was terrible before he got the job. Every single thing he's done since then has been terrible.
Their team is so bad right now, and yes, he is losing it, which is a problem. I mean, literally,
who made the team bad? Him.
His quarterback had to go. Well, they were bad last year without him. His quarterback had to go on Twitter and say, "I'm a Raider," and like do a skull emoji.
Yeah, that same quarterback who blasted the fans in Oakland for not staying loyal to a team that is moving to another state as soon as their stadium's ready. So yeah, so John Gruden, you have him up at number 20. So you think John Gruden's an average coach?
I think they have three really good first round picks. I don't think he's an average coach. I just think his ceiling is higher than all the guys we talked about. I mean, he's won everywhere he's been.
First of all,
good coordinators.
First of all, he did not win in Tampa. Okay, after you know, like the last 3 or 4 years in Tampa, he didn't win anything, and then he hasn't been a coach for 15 years.
I mean, he didn't have a QB in Tampa though.
Well, he hasn't won anything since 2002. So, you know, okay. I do not think he's a good coach. I do not think he should have been a coach. To me, he's the worst.
He's only 55. It's not like he's washed up.
Yeah, but he's been out of the league for so long.
Okay, there's so only, maybe it'll take him time to learn. You know when you learn? This year. The next year
you know
who, have been
you know who didn't
league.
Learn when he came back the second time? It didn't work
who?
For...
Art Shell, Joe
yeah,
Gibbs.
it didn't work for Washington with Gibbs. It didn't work yeah. for... It didn't yeah, work for Dick Vermeil. Dick Vermeil's like the only example.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so John Gruden to me, the guys. Reason John Gruden to me is dead last is because from the moment they signed him, we knew it was idiotic. We knew it was going to fail. Whereas these other guys, Steve Wilks, I don't know for a fact he might fail. I didn't know anything about him. John Gruden to
right.
me is an all-time
yeah, I think Gruden will be okay because he's going to have he's unfireable right now, so he's going to have plenty of time to
yeah.
To I did see someone like give his excuses by year, so it's like 20 you know 2018 just learning 2019 you know. Drafting, you know, there was something else like 2020 moving to Vegas, 2021 draft new quarterback, 2022 new quarterback. So, like every year had a new excuse of how he could last 10 years.
Yeah,
I think he'll be okay.
All right, tied with Jason with John Gruden is Jason Garrett. You know, the jokes have been made endlessly about this guy. You know what he has on Jerry Jones, how he still has the job. Jerry Jones, by the way, his track record of trading first round picks for wide receivers, he's failed twice. He figures third time's a charm. Did you see Kevin O'Connor on The Ringer? You know, The Ringer does write about football once a month. And they wrote an article, a very funny article about the Raiders Cowboys trade, where yeah, they talked about basically, that? It's not that John Gruden won a trade because he's smart. It's sort of by accident. Sort of like Tibbs with Jimmy Butler, although he actually didn't win that one in hindsight. But, you know, there's so many idiots in the league that John Gruden is making terrible trades left and right, but, you know, he found a bigger idiot than himself in Jerry Jones.
Yeah, we were having an argument in a Jets WhatsApp group. I wouldn't have given up a third or a fourth, and the Jets are just as desperate for a receiver now because they were playing special team guys against you and waiver wire guys.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have given up a third or a fourth. I would have, because put it this way, where does Amari Cooper go in the next draft using his current contract? So he's young, he's like 25, but he's got
next
year
he's
year
due
left.
$13.5 million.
$13 million, and then you have to repay him again. And by the way, if you think you're getting a steal, like you're not, because there's no free agent receivers don't hit the market, unlike free agent running backs. So, I mean, Bill Barnwell said that the Jets, Anderson and Anunua are going to get eight figures a year. They're going to get $10 million a year, and the Jets are like they have no receivers, and their guys are getting paid $10 million.
Yeah.
So.
And another example of Jerry Jones being an idiot is the fact that Jason Garrett still has his job in 2018.
Yeah. All right. So is that who we're talking about, Jason Garrett?
Yeah. Yeah. Tied with John Gruden
yeah,
at
I mean,
number 26.
He sucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Who's
not
next?
Good. All right. Number 25. We already discussed him at the top of this episode, Pat Shurmur.
I need to see more.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that everyone.
Well, you have
the
all
Browns,
the rookies
so
very low. You have Patricia 28, Shurmur 29. I have
yeah,
Shurmur 22.
It would be insulting to have them over.
And full disclosure, I had Shurmur 23 yesterday. I moved him up one spot because I moved him up ahead of Marvin Lewis because Marvin Lewis would never have understood that you go for two in that scenario.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. A lot of coaches would not have done that.
Yeah. So, Pat Shurmur, his play calling is not good. Look, he's hamstrung because his front office said the rule of this job is you have to keep Eli Manning. And Pat Shurmur, as an offensive coordinator, I'm sure did not want to keep Eli Manning, but he doesn't have a choice right now. So, you know, I think that we have to give Pat Shurmur a chance.
Yeah.
All right, and one spot ahead of him is the coach that I watched in action on Sunday.
Who'd you watch on Sunday? Todd Bowles?
Yeah.
I mean,
you watched the entirety of the Jets-Vikings game, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I have so many questions here. Why did they not call a timeout at the end of the first half when they let the clock run from 120?
He doesn't know how to use the timeouts. He's really clueless with timeouts. Amazingly, Sean McVay has a guy who does it for him because he's so busy coaching the game.
Yeah,
so
that
like
seems
the
like
best coach.
Well, yeah. But, if the smartest coach acknowledges that he can't do it solo, you'd think that'd be a hint to yeah. the stupid coaches. But
now it's possible Bowles has one and they don't talk about it, and he's just bad at his job because Herm Edwards used to have.
Well, somebody said Dick Curl, somebody said last night one of these smart Twitter followers that I follow mm-hmm. said, and this is what annoyed me so much about the
Twitter followers. Yes. They follow you. They
yeah.
don't care what you have to say. But yeah,
one of the reason I was so pissed off at the announcers last night and I was livid is because what he pointed out or somebody pointed out, every single team except I think the Chargers. The Chargers do not have an analytics department. Every single team has a guy on their staff who calculates and explains these odds to the coaches and explains to the coach why you are supposed to go for two in that situation. So every single NFL coach has been told that it is the correct thing to do. And what's frustrating is even though the coach knows he's supposed to do it, he doesn't do it anyway. And as we said before, why? Because he wants to avoid being the topic of conversation. He would rather the players be blamed or someone else be blamed. He doesn't want it to be about his decisions. And so he intentionally makes the wrong decision so that he will avoid the spotlight. And the reason for that is because when a coach does make the right decision, you have these idiotic announcers who are lambasting him. And so the announcers aren't just like a symptom. They are the problem. It is because they act this way that coaches, therefore, make the wrong decisions for their teams. And that's why the announcers being so stupid is so frustrating, because it's not just that they're affecting the viewing experience, they're actually affecting the game itself. Anyways, yeah. But Todd Bowles, yes. Honestly, I don't think, you know, he's obviously a disaster when it comes to clock management, but I think he does have some positive aspects. You know, he is a guy who got this team with nobody to 10 wins a couple of years ago.
He got them to 10 wins. Now, the players seem to like him, but also he's definitely a player's coach. They can sort of do whatever they want, which is why they like him. Which I guess if you're going to lose, you have to be a player's coach, so they're not mad. And at the end of the year, when you win that final Week 17 game, go to 6-10, players are like, yes, we're going to keep you. Bruce Arians, who's like his best friend, was announcing the game. He's an unconventional announcer, but he's probably one of the better announcers, Arians. And he was saying that, by the way, the worst announcer right now is Chris Spielman, who's can't complete a sentence. And
yeah.
Is an absolute buffoon. So Arians was saying, and again, he's trying to pump up his buddy, that he always thought he would work for Todd Bowles. Like he thinks Bowles is an absolute genius and an incredible coach. So people are impressed with him, but I think maybe he's overpromoted and he should be a defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I have him at 24. Again, I said everybody from 17 and below, except for the rookies, should probably be fired. But you know, there are worse coaches. All right, number 23,
yeah.
And like you have with Patricia and Shermer and everybody else, you have this guy in the bottom five. Mike Vrabel. I have him all the way up at 19 because he's made a couple of the correct decisions, including the way that he went for two on Sunday as the underdog to avoid going into overtime against a much better team. So I have him all the way up at number 19.
Okay.
For some of these rookies, and you are the one who tends to overvalue the rookies. I mean, Dan Quinn's rookie year, they were 6-0 or 5-0.
And Adam Gase. Quinn and Gase, yeah. I was basically putting in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but I've actually been more guilty of that today than you have. I've been overrating the rookies. But my attitude basically is that everybody below Vrabel, everybody in the bottom 10, 12, I know that they're failures. Vrabel, I don't know yet. He hasn't had a chance to fail. So maybe he'll succeed.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying. He could be the best coach ever. We wouldn't know yet.
Yeah. All right, let's get to number 22. This is the biggest disagreement on our entire list. I have him 30. I think he's a terrible coach. I think he should have been fired and then rehired just to be fired a second time for the Nathan Peterman situation last year with Tyrod Taylor. But you love Sean McDermott. You have him all the way up number 15. You think he's an above-average NFL head coach.
I think McDermott knows what he's doing because he took a garbage team last year to the playoffs, and this team is...
They were the worst playoff team we might have ever seen in our lives.
Okay, but they still, like, there were 10 teams that did not make the playoffs.
Yeah, but he tried to make them not make the playoffs by benching Tyrod Taylor for one game.
Obviously, the Peterman thing is insane, but also he has no other, like, decent options.
But these are decisions that he makes. They let Tyrod Taylor go, right? Then they sign a quarterback in the offseason. They trade him before he even plays for them, right? McCarron.
Yeah.
Like, the reason that they're stuck with Derek Anderson and Nathan Peterman right now is because of decisions that he has made.
Partially him, partially Bean or whoever.
Yeah, the front office has to go also. But to me, this is a collective band of losers and in Buffalo. It's a pathetic situation. And, so Sean McDermott, to me, he's got to go. He's number 30. Biggest disagreement on our list, number 22 overall. Now tied at 20, we have two more AFC veteran coaches. Marvin Lewis. There's nothing to say about Marvin Lewis anymore.
No, nothing interesting to say.
Yeah, it's like Jason Garrett. He'll be around forever, no matter that he never wins a playoff game. And then Bill O'Brien, who, you know, came on a couple
of
years ago.
Every time you watch a Texans game, you think like, oh, I hate this guy. He needs to be fired. Like, try betting on the Texans.
Yeah, Hard Knocks, and Hard Knocks really makes you see which coaches are terrible and which coaches are good. And most of them come out not looking good. Hugh Jackson did not come out looking good. Bill O'Brien did not come out great as a coach. As a guy, he seemed like a nice enough guy. But
Yeah. I mean, he wasn't Hugh Jackson level of bad.
The crazy thing is that somehow this team is now in first place in that division after 7 weeks.
It's not so crazy. The division stinks. I mean, you got Mariota in that division.
After week three, everybody was slurping Jacksonville left and right. You know, when they put that beat down on the Patriots at home. Houston was 0-3, was losing at home to garbage teams like the Giants. Yeah. And somehow Houston with the least impressive four-game winning streak ever. Right, I mean, like, winning in the last second against garbage teams like Buffalo. All right, so Bill O'Brien and Marvin
Lewis. That division could be 4-8-8 teams, or like the Titans 7-9 or something.
All right, number 19, continuing my streak of way overvaluing the rookie quarterback, rookie coaches, Matt Nagy. You have him at 26, the same place that you have Vrabel and Patricia and Shermer and everybody else. I have Matt Nagy all the way up at number 14. This is the guy I value the most, like where we have the biggest disagreement in favor of me. I have him at number 14. I've been really impressed with what he's done for the Bears. Mitch Trubisky is the ninth best quarterback in the NFL right now. So either we owe somebody a big apology on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Or Nagy's just been, a really good coach.
Yeah, well, they're feisty. They're special team. You know, I feel like they're outperforming their, am I nervous that they're playing them this week? Am I nervous about playing them? No. I don't know. I need to see more of it. It's absurd to rank him at this point because he's got a quarterback that doesn't really know what he's doing yet.
Well, there's a rookie that you have pretty high up also who we'll get to. So, whose team has won two games. So, No, he's not even next. We'll get to him. Number 17, we have a tie. Anthony Lynn. I think we're a little low on Anthony Lynn because, like, his team has won a lot of games since he got there.
Yeah, I mean, Lynn is fine. Like, could Lynn be special? Maybe we would have seen it already. They have a really good team. That is the thing.
And Vance Joseph showed up the same year as first-year coaches in the same division with teams that we thought were sort of equal, like, but we've seen those teams have gone in very different directions, and I think the coach has to get partial credit for that.
Now, how about this? Lynn, Jaguars, Cowboys, Browns, Jets, running back coach for 12 years. Gets named Rex's assistant for 2 years, and then is the offensive coordinator, I think, mid-season, right? Didn't the Bills fire their OC after like one or two games in the last Rex year?
Yeah.
Greg Roman gets fired after, I think, a game, maybe after two games.
Yeah.
So he had less than a season of OC experience and gets hired as a coach. So you talk about, and he's 49, he's young, talk about people being promoted quickly, like, a little scary. None of the career offensive coordinator. If you're an offensive coordinator and you make it to year three, you should be nervous that you're gonna, that you're like, oh, I'm a career coordinator now. Forget it. Because I feel like these guys only get hired after a year. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's like you want it. Well, that when the Vikings had Brad Childress and Mike Tomlin, and after the first year of Tomlin as defense coordinator, the Steelers hired him, I was screaming at the time, like, if a franchise like the Steelers, which has been incredibly stable and wins Super Bowls over and over and over, if they try and hire your defense coordinator, you fire your coach and hire your defense coordinator before you let him leave outside the building. So,
Teams have had weird conflicts. You had Pagano and Arians, right? Yeah. That weird thing where Arians wasn't the coach, but he won Coach of the Year when Pagano got sick.
All right, so tied with Anthony Lynn is Mike McCarthy. I'm surprised he's this high. And again, this just speaks to how many bad coaches
there are.
I'm
so sick of McCarthy. Like, we're going to look back and see, like, oh, you know, the Packers won one Super Bowl during the
He destroyed Aaron Rodgers. And again, Warren Sharp and other guys on Twitter are just apoplectic about it. They say, like, you look at all the smart play callers now. You know, you see your Sean McVays or whatever, or your Andy Reid's, and you see what probably the best, in terms of, like, pure talent, Aaron Rodgers is probably the best quarterback of all time.
Yeah,
is that fair to say?
Pure talent, I think there's no question.
Yeah.
I mean, John Elway is definitely close, just in physical ability. But, yeah, in terms of talent,
yeah.
Rodgers is one.
And yet Aaron Rodgers has won Super Bowl, and it's because Mike McCarthy has just drowned him
one
year
Super Bowl
after year
appearance.
Terrible play calling. Yeah. All right, number 16, and this is the last guy on my list of guys who need to be fired, is Jay Gruden. If Washington were to do something this year.
He's going to win that division, possibly. Like, I wouldn't fire him yet.
Yeah, well, that's what we've been saying for years.
I will, like, if he does.
What,
has he
made one playoff game so far in his career?
If the next 10 years he gets fired, you know John's bringing him as a coordinator, Rex Ryan style. So that's going to be fun.
One way or the other, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get him another 10-year deal.
I mean, could Jay take over and John demote himself to offensive coordinator?
Or general manager, since he does have final say in the roster.
Yeah.
Also. And Richie McKenzie, like, openly, I think, gets to, like, sit and drink coffee all day because he has no say in anything. It's kind of awkward.
Well, it's sort of like the Timberwolves general manager, Scott Layden, from your Spurs, who does nothing all day also because Tibbs doesn't let him.
Scott Layden, I think, is really from the Knicks. He's not really from the Spurs.
Nah, but he was on the Spurs most recently.
I mean, the Spurs will, like, any nice guy, the Spurs will, like, bring into their front office and, like, rehab.
All right, number 15, a rookie coach, probably way too high. His team literally had one win until they got to play Buffalo this week, Frank Reich. This was the Colts' second choice.
Scott Layden never was part of the Spurs. I don't know what you're talking about.
Wait, who's the Timberwolves GM who they got from the Spurs?
It's Scott Layden. He's not. I don't think he's from the Spurs. He doesn't have the word Spurs on his Wikipedia page. But maybe. Maybe he was, like, in the front office for a year. But he's the Knicks GM. Or is he Frank Layden? Oh, Frank Layden. He's... I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, he was the GM of the Knicks.
I could have sworn he was doing something for the Spurs. He was like a consultant or something.
Yeah, he was the assistant GM at some point. You're right.
Okay. All right, whatever.
It's not interesting.
All right, okay. Why do we have Frank Reich at number 15 when his own team didn't even want him? He was a second choice, and his team
Oh, I have no
wins.
Idea. I don't know why. He should be with the other guys like 22.
Yeah. Frank Reich somehow snuck all the way up our list.
I like how aggressive he is. Like, there are definitely things I like.
Oh,
but
I agree. He's made good decisions, and that's why I had him this high. But, like, you know.
I'm very happy that, you know, Luck, you have to be out of your mind ecstatic that Luck looks really good. Marlon Mack now looks feisty. Like, that offense, and Ebron's having an amazing year. Like, that offense could be one of the better offenses going down the stretch.
Yeah. All right, nobody cares about fantasy, so I'm not going to say the stupid stories about Marlon Mack. All right, Adam Gase, number 14. You still love him. You have him at number 12.
I love Adam Gase. He's the best coach in the NFL.
Yeah, he might not have his job after this season.
He is losing the locker room. I like him as an in-game coach.
Well, he's losing the locker room's he's losing the players' agents. Devontae Parker's agents.
No. If you lose the agents, you've really lost the players.
But Devontae Parker's agent,
the player
was amazing.
The agent do that.
Did you see the quote? Yeah. He's like, Devontae shouldn't be inactive. Gase should be inactive.
Yeah, no, that's wild. But I did Google, and I believe that it's like an old man agent, and it's his only client. It's like a guy who, like, I believe it's actually not a funny story. I think he was Corey Stringer's agent, and like after Corey Stringer died, he like couldn't even like think the word football for a decade or something.
Oh, that's too bad.
And now it's like his only client. So he could do insane things like that because he's not losing anybody.
So when Devontae Parker said, "My agent is not speaking for me," he might actually be honest in this case.
Yeah, oh, for sure. He's a crazy person. He could fire, but then you fire the guy.
Yeah.
Like Richard Matthews, who got cut from the Titans because he like signed an extension for $0 and did all these crazy things, then demanded to get traded when he was benched for a day, even though it clearly wasn't a big demand as it took him a few weeks to get hired, was his own agent. He didn't have an agent. Like, there's a reason you should, like, those top 10 agents, you should just hire one of them. Because these guys who have no clients are, like, representing yourself or getting, like, Master P, Ricky Williams style. Yeah. It doesn't work out.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We're starting to get to some decent coaches. Doug Marrone, number 13. Right, you have them all up at number 10. I think that's a little bit high. Again, this team is underwater right now in a bad division.
No, I think Marrone is, you know, you look back, it's like, he won in Buffalo, which is hard to do. He kind of wanted Syracuse. I think Marrone is a good coach. Now, this year is a mess, but, like, he almost made the Super Bowl with Blake Bortles as his quarterback. Like, Doug Marrone is a very good coach. I would rather have Marrone over anybody else we've discussed so far. That's where you use your rankings. Over everyone we've talked about.
Well, I agree. I have him at number 15, and everybody we've had is below him. But you have each of the next three guys on our list behind Marrone on your list. So that's Ron Rivera, Dan Quinn, and Kyle Shanahan. Your beloved Dan Quinn.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys I'd be happy with if they were my
coach. Let's take them one at a time. All right, Quinn, so Ron Rivera is number 12. We like Riverboat Ron. He's okay. He's a poor man's Andy Reid, I would say.
It's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. Ron Rivera is a poor man's Andy Reid.
All right.
He's a little bit more of a gambler. Like, Andy Reid is a little bit more by the book. Andy Reid gambles with play calling.
Andy Reid's play calling is much more exciting. All right, there's not a lot to say. Dan Quinn at number 11. This is a little bit lower than we've had him in the last few years. Obviously he went to a Super Bowl, and then last year they regressed a lot, and this year they've also regressed. So at a certain point,
Rivera, like speaking of these guys' experience in their first head coaching job, Rivera was the Bears' defensive coordinator for 3 years. The coach gets fired, he leaves, he gets a linebacker job for a year, then he's the Charger for 3 years. So this guy has 6 years of experience, not as an extremely, one of the most well-known D coordinators, and then he gets a job, and now he's in year eight, and, with no signs of slowing down, having made 4 playoff games in the Super Bowl.
Although Jack Del Rio sort of looked that way.
Coordinated for 1 year. That's really the lesson of this whole podcast.
Jack Del Rio hung around for a long time in Jacksonville, and then got a second job in Oakland. Just in terms of another former linebacker who was a coach for longer than, in hindsight,
Del Rio, I believe, was a coordinator for a long time. You're saying he was only coordinator for 1 year?
Oh, I don't remember. I was just thinking of linebackers.
Yeah, Del Rio was the Panthers coordinator and for one year before he got the Jaguars job. So that is true. Although it's not like he was great as a Jaguars coach, to be fair.
Well, I mean, he was the best coach the Jaguars have ever had, except for Coughlin.
They won a lot at the beginning, and then they lost the last 4 years he was there.
Yeah. All right, well, I mean, every coach loses at the end. That's why he gets fired. All right.
Amazing how many of these guys get jobs after 1 year. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, nothing ever ends well, otherwise it wouldn't end. All right, number 11 is Dan Quinn. Again, let's 2 years in a row where they're regressing is kind of a problem, and that's why he's out of the top 10.
I just think the defense doesn't have enough talent to be an NFL defense. That looks like what's happening. I mean, they could barely beat the Giants.
Well, he's a defensive guy, so that's sort of on him a little bit, though.
Yeah, but they don't have the players. Like, they all got hurt at the beginning, and they didn't have a lot of depth. I mean, I don't know, like, what you could expect from them.
All right.
It's not like Ryan. I mean, it's not Ryan is playing great. Ryan is you know, you're anti Ryan, but Ryan's having a really good year.
Yeah, I'm not anti Ryan. He's the fifth best quarterback in the NFL. All right, number 10, Kyle Shanahan. I have him way too high. I'm up at number 8. He was a great offensive coordinator. What has he actually done as a coach so far?
It's possible. Listen, I mean, he's had, other than Garoppolo for like 7 games, he has had, you know, the worst quarterback in the NFL.
But again, these are his decisions. He took over a team that had Colin Kaepernick. These are partially his decisions.
I mean, they weren't going to win with Kaepernick as a starter, I don't think.
Well, I mean, they went to the Super Bowl with Kaepernick, so, you know.
Yeah, but listen, I mean, so bring the friggin' back Kaepernick. They should bring him back. Yeah. Although Beathard is better than I think people would guess.
I don't know. Beathard has looked very good against like the Packers, and then he's looked very, very bad in other games.
I'm saying he'll be a backup in the league for a while. He's not like starter good, but he's not like Derek Anderson.
He's like Case Keenum, and then he'll accidentally have a good year 1 year, and then get a big contract, and you know,
get a starting job, and then be absolutely disastrous. Yeah. I agree.
Okay, number 9, the lowest he's ever been on our list by far, but he's getting into his late 60s, and that's what happens. Pete Carroll.
Well, I had him higher than 9 for sure.
You had him at 7.
Really low.
Not much higher.
I mean, yeah, but this is too much like there's too many flaws on that team. Like, they're old in weird places, the receivers aren't great.
But sometimes
the running backs aren't
a coach
great. They don't have
honestly,
a tight, like, yeah.
Unless you're Bill Belichick or, you know, Greg Popovich, like sometimes a coach has been there too long. And I just think that's the case with him.
I mean, they've never had a losing record since 2011.
I mean, look, this is what we thought about Sean Payton, and he sort of had a comeback the last couple of years. So maybe they can have another comeback. We'll see. But also, Sean Payton's a lot younger.
He's never been worse than 7-9 with the Seahawks. Like, and he hasn't. He's never been worse than 9-7 since they started.
Well, 7-9 is our rankings. You have him at 7. I have him at 9. All right, number 8.
Perfect.
By far the lowest he's ever been on our list. He's never been outside my bottom 3 until this year. Mike Tomlin. I have Mike Tomlin all the way down to 10. I understand that in terms of motivating the players and like players' respect, he seems to be probably the best coach in the league. The players really love to play for him.
I don't know, but he's just also losing the locker room. I'm not even sure that's true.
By the way, never been worse than eight and eight.
Never been.
But
worse
year
than eight
after
eight.
Year
His
after
third
year,
worst year is 9-7, which is bananas.
But year after year after year, we just see terrible decisions on the field. And look, I still have him at number 10. I still think he's a very good coach. Most teams would be lucky to have him. But when you make these bad decisions year after year after year, week after week, like, it starts to build up. You can't be considered an elite coach anymore. It's just too big of a flaw.
They've quietly only made the AFC title game once in the last 7 years, which isn't great. He's only won since the second Super Bowl, which is his fourth year. He's only won 3 playoff games, which would be great for anybody else, but is not great for him in 7 seasons.
Yeah, I'm not saying Tomlin's terrible. I have him
back
number 10
now, but because the first Super Bowl of the Steelers was Cowher, then Roethlisberger's there, but not the skill position guys, and then you're going to look and say Roethlisberger, Le'Veon, Antonio Brown, now Juju, and like they never even made a Super Bowl, those guys, as a group.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, of the coaches we've mentioned so far, Pete Carroll and Mike Tomlin, the last two, they'll both end up in the Hall of Fame. Has anybody else?
But I would you'd give you know, $1 million to, like, as a fan, to have one of these guys your coach. I would love, if the Steelers fired Mike Tomlin, I would pack Todd Bowles' house for him and carry the stuff back to St. Louis or wherever he's
Who's the best Jets coach in history?
I mean, Weeb Ewbank, for sure. But, I mean, Parcells, really, but Weeb Ewbank.
Yeah.
No, Weeb Ewbank's an amazing coach. Like, we overrate Namath because of 68, but who really spearheaded that amazing team? Weeb. And look what he did in other places. So, Parcells, who's the third best coach is an interesting question, because it's like Eric Mangini. It's Herm Edwards.
All right, number 7, another veteran who, again, a couple years ago we thought was on the way out and has turned it around a little bit, Sean Payton. I mean, he still doesn't do anything with his defense.
Here's the thing. Most of these guys, like everyone from like 22 to like 14 and certainly the 32 to 30 to 23 are useless, but like all those, they're useless. They don't have a thing. Like Payton can create an amazing offense. And Michael Thomas wasn't supposed to be like the top 3 or 4 receiver. Like, these guys get better on the Saints. And defensively,
yeah, but Sean Payton has also had a top 10 quarterback for his entire career.
Of course.
And I don't mean top 10 in the league. I mean top 10 in the history of football.
100%. And, I mean, he's first all time in a lot of stats. Like, I don't listen, I mean, you could only judge him based on Breeze because that's all he had. But players get better in the Saints system. The Saints system is so underrated.
All right. Now, we have a very interesting tie at number five. It's also interesting because of the one that you ranked higher and the one I ranked higher. We have Mike Zimmer and Doug Peterson tied. I have Peterson higher. You have Zimmer higher. Now, we both have him a spot apart, so it's not a big difference.
I mean, you're giving Peterson like a Lifetime Achievement Award for last season, which was incredible, winning the Super Bowl with your backup quarterback.
Well, okay. Well, but not only that, he's, again, this year against the Vikings, he was the one who did the thing that is correct, which is go for two in that situation, which we've never really seen anybody else do.
Yeah. No, he definitely is a good coach. He knows what to do. I'd be happy to have him as my coach. Is he going to be like a top five coach? Are we going to? Because, listen, guys win the Super Bowl and then get fired.
Yeah, I mean, I've been more impressed with Zimmer just because of what he's done with so little.
This guy could definitely end up being Brian Billick. Like, think after the Ravens win the Super Bowl, we would have ranked him one in our power rankings of coaches.
Dynamite offensive coordinator in Minnesota, goes to Baltimore, wins the Super Bowl almost immediately.
And then nothing ever again. So I need to see a little bit more. I think that, you know, what do you have from him? You have a very, very mediocre last place season, then an incredible Super Bowl championship.
Well, they had a rookie quarterback that year. Okay. Yeah. All right. So I just want to remind everybody.
This year might be a wash for Wentz. Like, he might not be 100%, and he doesn't look great, and who knows.
Akiva just said, and I just want everybody to listen, Doug Peterson, phenomenal coach last year, but I want to see a little more before I anoint him. Okay.
Years he sucked.
That's fine.
And now he might not win the worst division in the NFL.
This is what we call impeaching the witness. I just want that on the record. That's what Akiva said. Okay. I will bring that up later. All right.
Okay.
Number four. You know what's coming.
Yeah.
Number four, John Harbaugh. A little bit of a renaissance for him.
I've always thought about Harbaugh Tomlin. Right now, I think if you had the 33rd NFL team, an expansion team, and you had to hire a coach, let's say we win the Mega Millions. By the way, you couldn't even freaking own half a team with the Mega Millions. Do you play the lottery, by the way?
No, of course not. I'm not a moron.
You don't play the lottery?
No, it's a stupid tax.
Dr. Jen doesn't play the lottery? I could see Dr. Jen playing the lottery.
Of course not. It's a stupid tax. I think the lottery is immoral, and the fact that governments have lotteries is deeply unethical, but, you know, it's a tax on stupid people.
Well, listen, I'd say 80% of our listeners bought a freaking Mega Millions ticket. So,
but our listeners can afford it, and so it's just a lark and it's stupid. I mean, I read a study once. Do you know what percentage of annual income?
So why don't you go out and give out lottery tickets to poor people?
That's the average person in America, who makes less than $10,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And this study is from like 2014.
The average person doesn't make less than $10,000.
No, I said a person who makes $10,000 a year. And again, this number's from 2014, so it might be slightly different now.
Sociologist over here.
Guess what percentage of their annual income they spend on lottery tickets?
I don't even want to know.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to know. It shouldn't be a percentage, and the answer is 10%. Because the government tells people your only chance is to buy these tickets when literally you have a better chance of getting, you know, hit by lightning while having sex with Gisele Bündchen. And it's just,
you almost hope that happens to somebody.
Yeah. So if you have money and you want to buy a ticket to be, you know, whatever, it's like getting a drink, who cares? But for people who buy lottery tickets with the hope or expectation of winning, which is, you know, unfortunately.
What would you do with $500 million? Like post-tax $500 million?
The point I'm making is there's poor people who every single week go and buy tons of lottery tickets because they think that's the only chance they have.
I mean, there's also a lot of middle-class people do it too.
Well, then they're also stupid, but at least they can afford it. So, all right. I'm not buying a lottery ticket.
What would you do with $500 million if you won?
With $500 million?
Yeah. How would it affect my life? Would I get any money if you won?
How would it affect your life? Well, I think I would. Well, this is the thing. With $500 million, you can buy a minority interest in a team, but not enough to have any kind of control.
Sure. So, you get a suite for sure.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I could put
nice
together. Well, no, if you. Well. You know, if I have $500 million and I can, you know, if a lot of that's liquid and I can put, you know, half of it down, maybe I can put together a team. Maybe I can become anyway.
I mean, it's going to be $250 immediately. You know who's at the door right away.
Dr. Jed's waiting for that. All right. Number two, we have a tie, and I'm going to go off on you. So one of the guys we have at number two is Andy Reid, which again shows how hard it is to be an NFL head coach because this is a guy who cannot manage the two-minute drill, cannot manage the clock at all. But yet is so good at everything else that, you know, we have him at the very top of our rankings.
It must be said their talent right now is ludicrous. Yeah. Like Hunt, Hill, Watkins, Kelsey.
But he deserves credit for that. Watkins has been a failure in multiple places, including with your beloved Sean McVay.
In hindsight, it's possible that he, like, elevated Alex Smith to be amazing when Alex Smith actually blows.
Yes. That's not in hindsight. That's pretty clear. All right. Let's talk about the other guy you have here. So if we can go back to what you said a few minutes ago about Doug Peterson, you said he did a great job last year. He just won the Super Bowl. Let's see a little bit more before I anoint you. On your rankings, you had Sean McVay number one ahead of everybody, including Bill Belichick. Can I ask you something?
Yeah, because he's the best coach.
Can you win one playoff game? Just one. Can you win one playoff game before you go to number one?
I mean,
on the
he didn't
list?
Have a team worthy of winning a playoff game. He's basically never lost in his career. Peterson.
He was home. Wait, he was a favorite. He was a favorite and had a home game in the playoffs last year and lost.
Can I tell you what's consistent with the absolute elite coaches that we've discussed? That's Carroll, Tomlin, Harbaugh, Belichick. They never, I mean, Belichick lost a little at the beginning of his career. These guys never lose. And also Andy Reid, who went 5-11 as a rookie, and then this century, of which he's been a coach every single year, in this is year 19 of the century, he went 6-10 once and 4-12 once. 4-12, he got fired. Other than that, he's been over, he had 1-8-8, and he's been over 500, 15 years. And it was about to become 16 in a couple weeks. Listen, Sean McVay hasn't lost yet. Let Sean McVay lose once.
I love Sean McVay. I have him number five. Yeah. Projecting out, maybe he'll end up there. But putting him number one is like putting Pat Mahomes number one on a quarterback ranking.
If you had to start a franchise today, are you hiring McVay or Belichick?
Well, I'd pick McVay because he's 37 and Belichick is
one
67.
Season. One season. The NFL is collapsing because it turns out Merrill Hodge's book was wrong. And there is CTA, and there's a lawsuit, and we lose, and we get one more year.
I think Belichick's brilliance is probably more over the long term, like how he repeatedly trades to get draft picks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In one game, I honestly don't know what I would do. In one game, I might take Doug
Peterson.
Also,
Belichick is a GM versus Belichick.
Yeah, honestly, if I take one game, and I might be Doug Peterson or Mike Zimmer in terms of in-game management. Because Andy Reid, because those guys don't have obvious flaws in-game, and neither does McVay that I've noticed. But again, let's win a playoff game, right?
Yeah.
Let's get to 20 career victories.
He's going to win a lot of playoff games this year. Well, only three because he's going to have a bye, but then he'll win three of them.
Yeah. All right. Number one, the GOAT, Bill Belichick, obviously. You have him number two on your list, which is just ridiculous, but whatever.
I mean, listen, McVay got to the top without cheating. You can't say that about Bill Belichick.
That's true. That's absolutely correct.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. All right. Should we talk about our picks a little bit?
Very quick picks because we've been hemming and hawing.
Yeah, well, last week the Vikings and the Jets played each other for the first time in 4 years.
By the way,
even discuss football.
Kyle Snyder lost to Abdul Sayyaf. America's in the toilet.
Okay, all right.
Obama was still president.
Last week we only disagreed on one game. You picked Cleveland, I picked Tampa, so I won again. So you've been struggling picking your winners and losers. I'm going to make it very simple this week. I am picking the two teams who were in the Super Bowl last year, and I'm picking every other home team, including home underdogs in the Giants, the Raiders, and the Cardinals. But I'm picking every single home team except for the Eagles and Pats. So tell me where you disagree with me.
Okay, so that's good. We don't have to go through every single game. Every single home team except the Eagles
and the Patriots.
And the Patriots.
Yeah.
All right.
Patriots at Buffalo, Eagles at
Miami and Houston, I'm picking Houston. Philly at Jacksonville, that's not a home game. I'm picking that's in London, I'm picking Philly. Seattle and Detroit, I'm picking Detroit. Tampa Bay at Cincy, I'm picking Cincy. Washington at the Giants, I'm picking Washington.
Okay.
So I'm disagreeing with you there. Jets are 7.5-point underdogs now. It's a little too high. I would definitely take the points, but I'm taking the Bears. Baltimore and Carolina. Baltimore is the favorite.
Oh, they are?
Baltimore
Carolina was. When the spread came out, it was Carolina.
Here I see 1.5, but that's our CBS side. I don't know where they're
getting the lines
from. Okay, who are you picking? Baltimore. Baltimore's good. We haven't talked. Maybe next week we'll do the team power rankings. This is after week 8, but
yeah.
Baltimore's pretty good. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, obviously, Denver, KC. Indy at Oakland. Indy looked much better last week. I think Indy in a close one. Rams over the Packers. I think the Cardinals against the Niners, but obviously those teams are abysmal. Minnesota, that's going to be a really good game. Minnesota-New Orleans is an awesome Sunday night game.
Yeah, good job flexing that.
Obviously the Patriots over the Bills. Right, that was not flexed. You keep saying it was flexed. People say it was not flexed.
New Orleans and Minnesota was at 1 p.m. But, I have a printed Vikings schedule from the beginning of the year. The Vikings were playing New Orleans at 1 p.m.
Yeah, but maybe that's 1 p.m. Central, 8 Eastern.
Yeah.
Because when you said it last time, people said incorrect. People said you were wrong. Stop giving wrong information. I just Googled Saints-Vikings flexed. Nothing. Nothing is showing up. So I believe you are incorrect.
The Vikings-Saints game was at 1 p.m. That I know. I don't know what was at 8 p.m.
What
was
flexed out? The freaking Niners-Cardinals was supposed to be on Sunday night? We're waiting all week for Niners-Cardinals? No way.
I have, I have no idea. Let's try.
You're definitely wrong, because I've Googled like four different things already, and nothing's come up, which means it's not true.
Can we find a press release where they announce the Sunday Night Football games in like April?
Sure. So I mean, there's not even any drama, because you're obviously wrong, because it would have immediately popped up. 20 articles about it. But yes. All right, Chester.
Yeah. Somebody Chester. Find me like the press release where they announce the Sunday Night games.
Oh, listen, I know you're wrong.
Well, then my, you know, I'm trying to find this. I can't find it. We'll get to
someone told me a song they used to sing about you in high school. Can I sing it or no?
Yeah, you can sing it. But I mean, I think we'll have to edit it out.
Yeah, I'll change one word. It was Chester. Is there a second verse?
No, but yeah. So the way that was changed for the yearbook was Chester the protester.
Okay, fine. So yes, I changed the word that was in there to molester. Yeah. No, I changed the word to.
There were worse words. Yeah, and every single person we had Uri. That I probably have to edit out, right?
Yeah,
the Rossman one was great. It was Rossman's a cheap.
I think you have to take that one out, too.
That derived from the fact that our history teacher, Dr. Khan, said to Rossman, you really are the Antichrist.
All right. Yeah, no, it is crazy how, like, I was when the Kavanaugh stuff happened, like, how many things I would get. I didn't do anything bad in high school, but, like, anything from the yearbook, could imagine, like, a bunch of senators yelling at me. Like, there's a couple stories in there that it would have been.
This I'm obviously going to have to edit out, but.
Brand new star. All right.
So all the songs had a theme, as you can tell.
Now this podcast has become actionable, and you're gonna have to edit this entire thing.
It was a different era. It was a different era.
We should have just let's just end on my song and just cut the music.
Yeah. Oh, this is all has to be edited out, obviously.
Just cut everything and leave it out. Yeah. The end of my song is beautiful.
Yeah. All right, Kiva. I will talk to you next week.
Bye.